the November 7th special meeting of the Tri-Commission to order. Well, I'll call the Chelan County Board of Commissioners to order. I don't know if the county commissioners, are you already in session?
We're good.
Okay, good. Port Commission?
I'd like to call the Port of Chelan County special meeting to order as well. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And one thing I always do when I call our meeting to order, I make a request of everybody that they silence their cell phones if they would. I'll check mine too.
Check Ann's, right?
No. Nobody's
I'm not pointing any fingers, Commissioner. Remind anybody that's not seated around the table over the course of the discussion, if you could come up and use one of the mics and state your name for the record, because this meeting will be recorded. We record everything that we do here. And before we go any further, I'd like to ask Kevin Overbay if he would lead us in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have a safety minute this afternoon, and that's going to be presented. And this is another thing we do at Chelan PUD, is a safety minute with every meeting. It's going to be presented by Todd West of the Fish and Wildlife Operation.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Todd West. I'm the Fish and Wildlife Operations Superintendent here at Chelan. Big part of my job is logistics, and part of that logistics is mitigating for any potential hazards that face my crews or any of my staff. One of the daily hazards that we all face, everybody in this room, is weather. Now, I am not the most technologically savvy guy in the world. My 16 and 14-year-old son and daughter will tell me that I'm incompetent. But I like to refer to it as old school. Now, all of us nowadays carry smartphones. So there are three apps that I just want to point out to you guys. Washington Department of Transportation, WeatherBug, and AlertSense. Those are three very valuable tools that you can all add to your planning process for your travel, your operation, or an adventure. Again, I'm not saying old school is bad. It's still important to stick your head out the window and, you know, do the into the wind. But these are just tools that you can add to keep not only yourself but your loved ones safe. Thank you, and you guys have a good rest of the day.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you. So, looking at our agenda, we're really pleased to have all the commissioners here, all of our elected representatives from the State House and State Senate, and many others in the room. And we're going to start off, as you can see, with a legislative overview. And I'm not entirely sure of the protocol. Normally, it's senator first and then representative, knowing that Representative Condotta has probably his seniority more than doubles everybody else. Senator Hawkins, I would like to pose a question for you before you do the legislative overview, and that is, given the race that's going on over on the west side and the amount of money that's being spent in that race, how would you spend $4.5 million in a race in the 12th Legislative District?
Be good economic development, wouldn't it? Yeah, wow. Actually, I think it's more than that.
Well, I cut it in half.
Sure.
You're only one side of the equation.
Yeah, so that's an interesting, maybe we can start with that race, you know, not to get too political right from the jump, but the Senate is comprised of 49 members, and 25 are in the Majority Coalition Caucus, which I'm a part of, and then 24 are in the Democratic Caucus. And so this special election in this one particular district could swing the balance of power in Olympia and have some implications for public policy statewide, because if the majority changes, then the House would be in a Democratic majority, you know, as they are, and then the Senate as well, and then potentially, you know, the governorship as well, so they kind of be the trifecta situation there. So that could certainly change some dynamics, and I guess we'll learn more about that tonight. But I am excited to be here once again. I'll just be real brief. But first, I would just like to thank you all for your public service. So we're public servants just like you, just different roles, and along with everybody else in the room. So I just want to thank everybody for their public service and the chance for me to serve in this position. As you know, we had a long legislative session this past year. We did accomplish some major things. We passed two of the three budgets. We have an operating budget, a transportation budget, and then we still have a capital budget to approve. But that has been negotiated. The operating budget was a heavy, heavy lift for the legislature. It's a $44 billion two-year budget. Approximately half, 50%, is dedicated to K-12 education. We had some major reforms, especially with school levies, in this last legislative session. And as you probably know, school levies are used to supplement school district revenues along with some federal sources. So between the state dollars, the federal dollars, and then the school levy dollars, the school districts have their operating funds for the school years. In the past, school levies had been utilized just for extracurricular activities. But over time, arguably as the state has underfunded education, then school districts were utilizing their local levy dollars to fund basic education needs. So we really had to work hard to push the reset button on that issue, and we attempted to do that with our levy reform and also utilizing the additional revenue that was coming into the state to push out some additional funding to school districts. So hopefully we accomplished that. I'm sure the state Supreme Court, you know, will have their opinions, but the legislators feel that we did a good job addressing those needs, and there are a whole host of other issues as well, and I look forward to hearing more about those from you all, and really utilizing this time as a chance for us to hear from you and kind of get prepped up before the session starts. So with that, turn it back to you, Mr. Chair.
And I'll hand it right off to Representative Condotta.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for being here. I think this is a very efficient way to have a meeting. We have been driving a lot, and as Brad mentioned, this new educational program has, let's just say it's shaken up a few people, from teachers to administrators across our district, and we have a lot of school districts, and they're not quite sure what's going to happen, and they're very, very concerned. So we've spent a lot of time on the road. I remember one day I bounced from Quincy to the Grand Coulee Dam and back to Manson in one day. And so that's been very time-consuming. I think in the end it will be a very good program. I think it was put together well. There's a few glitches that we'll have to work out of it, but I think everybody will survive it. This short session is going to be quite interesting, and as Brad said, this race tonight makes some difference, not so much here in the short session, but the following year. This is a big deal for me, because if that goes the other way tonight and they go into the minority, then it is up to us to get the majority in the House next year, really, to get that backstop back, because the Senate really doesn't have an easy road back after this. There's potentially one race they could win. We have about four. So we're already working weekly. We have weekly meetings right now with our political team, and as the political director of the caucus, I'm going to be very busy. I'm hoping they win tonight. It'll take a little pressure off us, but otherwise I think that's going to have to be what we really have to work on next year. In the short session, I think we will make some adjustments to the education plan. I am hoping we come up with a Hearst fix very quickly. I would like to see that done before the session because we don't have a lot of time. I don't know that that'll happen. See, the mix doesn't change, even though tonight they feel that this is going to make a difference in this Hearst decision. It doesn't, because the House hasn't changed. Still requires 50 votes. And it's not really going to change that dynamic that much. We have to have a real fix, and we're not backing off on the capital budget. We will not give the votes, the 60 votes, for the for that plan. So we have our work cut out for us. We have to make some adjustments to the education plan. We have to fix Hearst. We have to pass that capital budget, and we have to get out of there in 60 days, because nobody wants to be there for a special session, I guarantee you, especially with a very tight election year coming at us. So I think the one thing that could upset the cart is this, the hearing the other day, the Supreme Court hearing on education was not very encouraging, to say the least. Most of the justices all ask why more money wasn't put in. Could we get more money? Can we get it this year? There was a lot of push, and I'm very concerned about what they say. If they come out and say we didn't get there, this thing is going to come apart. The wheels are going to come off the cart in Olympia, because we have added, you know, a tremendous amount of money to education. We need to work this through. We put together a good education plan, good funding plan, and we're done. As far as we're concerned, at least I can speak for our caucus, we're not going any further. We've done our work. We want to move on to other things that have been neglected. And so the court could really put a twist in this thing. My guess is that they will give us a one-year reprieve. They will retain jurisdiction and give us a one-year breather, but that's the best scenario we can hope for. Outside of that, looking forward to hearing the other issues that will be up. We will have some bandwidth for other things, hopefully, and we'd love to hear them. So thank you for having us.
Hey, Representative Steele.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for having us. It's a pleasure to be here. These are always very productive meetings, and it's nice to see the intersection of all of your groups, and it does help us set our legislative priorities. So one of the things that's happening next week, we all head back to Olympia for Assembly Days, and we'll be working on all of our various committees to set agendas as we lead up into this legislative session. Just touching briefly on the capital budget, one of the things I think it's important to note is that budget will not be renegotiated. We've negotiated that budget to the point where we think we like it, so we're not anticipating any major changes to that. So what you saw at the end of session is what we hope to pass very soon. And again, won't be passed, at least as far as our caucus is concerned, without a real solution to Hearst. So much has been said. It's been a very interesting condensed interim. So we've really had to work to make our schedules fit that condensed schedule. And hopefully, as both Brad and Carrie have said, we'll get out of this next session in 60 days so that we have a little more time to stretch out these meetings and be engaged a little bit more and have a little more time with our constituents around the district. It is the largest geographic district in the state, so we do a lot of driving, just under 9,000 square miles. So it's a lot of driving. But it does also bring with it lots of opportunities. As Carrie mentioned, we have 23 school districts, so you get to communicate with a lot of different folks and their perspectives. And we happen to represent, you know, some of the medium-sized school districts in the state, as well as the smallest school district in the state. So we have some interesting perspectives when we go back to Olympia, but really rely on all of you to help us set those legislative priorities. And it's great to have all the mayors and folks in the room as well in one place so that we can hear from all of you collectively. It does help as we communicate with one another and the rest of our colleagues in the legislature.
Super. So is Stehekin the smallest school district?
It is.
I sort of guessed that. Now, I just, before I move on to our priorities, I just wanted to make one last comment on that race on the west side. I just picked up in yesterday's newspaper, even though it's not being reported in nationally generally, that race is considered one of the top three races in the nation, behind the Virginia governor, New Jersey governor, and the Washington State Senate.
Yep.
So I mean, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
So anyway, well, thank you. And again, welcome for being here. And yeah, we always have priorities here at the local level, and Keith, you're at the top of the list.
Well, one of our priorities, I want to start by giving, just a thank you for your work on the West Cashmere Bridge. So, I mean, that is a priority that Chelan County has. It's a transportation priority, and, of course, with the Chelan-Douglas Transportation Council, we have other issues too, but that is one that we appreciate, particularly Senator Hawkins, your work in getting the money that we've had committed to that. One of the things that we as counties generally across the state feel, and we want hopefully to reinforce again and again, that we are sub-agents of the state, and we are asked and tasked with providing services that are often not funded. And one of the things that is a real high priority for us is the indigent defense. The state of Washington is about number 47 out of 50 states as far as providing indigent defense. It is a critical component for the counties to fund that. As we've seen with Grant County, the issues that they had with public defense. Chelan County, we've done a good job, but in saying that, we still have a real issue with the caseloads and the demands on the prosecutor or the public defender, and then that does relate back to the prosecutor also. You've mentioned the Hearst decision. That is still a major issue for us. I mean, we are continually getting calls from people, can we actually use our property? Because if we drill a well, will we be able to use that water? And so that is a very critical decision that needs to be resolved. We feel pretty comfortable with Chelan County having done what we've done with our watershed plans. We do have reserves in the Wenatchee, but even in 06 when it was adopted, one of the things that I said at that time was that that will dictate the amount of growth that can happen in the Wenatchee Valley. And now compounding that with the Hearst decision, that will even put more pressure on the growth constraints. And it's important for us to have growth in Chelan County, where only 13% of the land is in private hands. We're concerned about the public health funding. You know, public health, there's certain things that that is just a function of government, is to provide certain services. We are being constantly challenged at the health district to provide those services. We've done all we can to pare back anything that might be duplicated in the private sector. So we are doing things only that we feel is important for public service. And then, of course, it all boils back down to the fact that we're challenged from a revenue standpoint. That 1% cap that was voted in, and I think we, you know, based on the feedback, I mean, just about everybody voted for it. But with voting that in and restricting the revenue that can be raised, and then you have, you know, continually expenses that are outpacing that 1%, it would be helpful to have a little more flexibility in the on the revenue side, because the expectations that people have of government is ever increasing, and we are not being able to keep pace with that. So there are a couple other just local things that I wanted to touch on. From the MOTCA funds, you know, that we still have that the moderate risk waste facility out there through the solid waste portion of the ecology that needs to be addressed. We made the commitment not to build without the money. We had the money committed. We started building, and we don't have the money. We don't have the building. So that is still a high priority for us. The icicle work group has been a big issue for us. And when I say big, it's not, I'm sounding like President Trump now, but
huge.
There we go. But, you know, the money that's been allocated, if that capital budget gets approved, I mean, that will be very helpful, because it isn't something that is just for the county, but although it will help with some of the water issues, the in-stream flows, it's a major economic issue there with the Icicle Irrigation District. I mean, it's critical to have that water, you know, feeding the Wenatchee Valley. But I appreciate the support that we've had on that. One of the things that would be also another revenue source would be the marijuana revenues. And with the amount of money that's being generated in Chelan County to only get $50,000 a year back, it is we need some help based on the obligations that we have as far as enforcement with the codes and the zoning there. And the one thing I would ask that you do no harm. Do no harm to the counties. And unfortunately, after every session, it seems like there's another expectation that's been layered on counties to try and make it work. And one of the things that I will commend, you know, my fellow commissioners with is that we make it work. You know, every year the counties keep the doors open. We keep providing the services. We still assess the properties. We still collect the taxes. We still have our courts. But every year it gets more and more difficult for us to do that. So, I mean, I just would encourage you to keep counties in mind as you consider legislation. Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Baldwin.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. We always appreciate and enjoy having you here to hear what we have going on with our separate commissions. The Port of Chelan County's legislative agenda for this year consists of about 7 items. The first is the West Cashmere Bridge project. We're very interested in the completion of funding of the replacement project through the FEMSIB. So anything that you can do to help us with that, or we can do to help you help us with that, we'd be more than we'd look forward to that. Our second is on-call contracting. The state auditor's office has advised local governments that they do not have statutory authority to enter into on-call contracts, also sometimes referred to as the unit pricing contracts. We would appreciate support modifying the 53 RCW to allow for this money-saving practice. And I think that affects all of our jurisdictions. Rural economic development is on our agenda this year. Rural Washington is not sharing equally in the benefits of the state's economic engine, and we see two good approaches to helping with this: tax policies that will induce manufacturing companies to accelerate new investment, and a state program for rural county infrastructure funding that creates turnkey industrial sites in each rural county. Another item that we're watching is GA airport funding. The legislation to create the Community Aviation Revitalization Board was proposed during the 2017 legislative session, and it would provide a competitive loan program for revenue-generating projects at general aviation airports. $5 million to fund the program was proposed in the 2017 capital budget, and the airports in Chelan and Kashmir could benefit for that. So if we could continue to have support on that, we would appreciate it. Like the county, MOTCA funding is high priority for us. It's important to secure that ongoing funding for the Model Toxic Action Control Act for the remedial action grants, and along with that, curb funding and reform to support full funding for the Community Economic Revitalization Board, including reforming median wage requirements placed on certain projects. And then, as always, and I know you're sick of hearing me say this, but the Public Works Trust Fund. lucky you, I was reappointed to the board by the governor a couple months ago, so you're stuck with me for another 4 years. But the good news on Public Works Board, if you don't mind me sliding another hat on here for just a second, an update on that, is that even though the legislature adjourned without passing the proposed $4.2 billion capital budget, the Public Works Board stands on better footing today than 1 year ago. Thank you, all three of you, for your support in that. This is due to the support from our stakeholders as well as you, including cities, counties, special purpose districts, trades, and everybody in this Tri-Commission. So we're very grateful for that. And again, although the capital budget didn't pass, the loan list was included in both capital budgets to be funded at $97.1 million. Pre-construction funding and emergency funding was signed into law, providing $19 million to prevent shutdowns on projects that had already begun. And also out of last year's session, the board has been directed to evaluate and report on other financing approaches to provide access for financing for local governments who have trouble accessing existing financing. So the Public Works Board has a core team of stakeholders and financing experts, and they're moving forward in that effort. And we've started doing that about 3 weeks ago. So, and finally, there's still a chance that the legislature may pass a capital budget after the special election. You would know that more than I would, but I hear it's a rumor. And if not, the Public Works Assistant account is still in good position for the supplemental budget writing process in 2018. So that is all I have from both the Port and Public Works Board.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm looking at the list. I guess my name's next on the list. And Representative Condotta, I just wanted to share with you, you made a comment earlier about how efficient this meeting is and how good it is to have this many people in the room. And it reminded me, as I looked around the room, that the way this entity, the Tri-Commission, got started was about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there's very few people in this room today that were here 10 years ago. You're one of them. J.C. Baldwin and Keith Gaynor and I and Jeff Smith over there. You were here, but the start of the Tri-Commission, I was pointing to the three of us because it points to the first time we sat down in a work group with another person who's no longer with us, and that's Joyce Stewart, who is with the Port of Chelan County. The three of us were talking about an issue that intersected the needs of all three entities, and that's called the Peshastin Sewer. And guess what? We're still talking about it. I mean, and that is a true story. I have to add that when we first sat down with Joyce, I'll never forget her saying, you know, I love a good sewer project. And I thought, whoa. But I think everybody, all of you knew her when she was with the port. So anyway, that's an aside note. But For us, our number one issue this year, as it has been for a while now, is how we deal with Beauchassin Sewer, and the capital budget passage will really make a big difference. We understand, appreciate, respect, and support where you are on the Hearst decision. Don't get us wrong, but we really that the capital budget is really important to get passed for us. The second one is maybe a little bit more nuanced. It has to do with actually the election that's going on in Western Washington right now, and where our legislature will ultimately be on any potential carbon legislation. I think that's a real critical issue, and you guys know the nuances, and maybe not so much the nuances of the governor and his ambitions as it relates to carbon legislation. And so, you know, we're looking at it from a utility perspective, that we want whatever resolution comes out the other end to be the least cost solution for the people of Chelan County. And we don't know what's going to come out the other end. There's a lot of balls in the air right now, as you may all well imagine. So carbon legislation is high on our radar screen, and where that goes, we don't know yet. Pole attachments. That's another issue that was with us when I got elected as a commissioner. And so it seems like everything changes but remains the same. We feel like we had a good system in place today. We are want to retain that local control here. We're working with the people that have attachments, and we really don't see any need for legislation. Excuse me. I might back up to the top of our sheet that I know you all got when you came in, because this goes back to the pole attachments. Our number one priority always is protection of Title 54 operating authority. We believe completely in local control. And anything that diminishes that local control, we want to protect against changing. And Representative Hawkins, being a former employee, are you former or still employee?
And still.
Okay. you understand how important that is to us here, the local control aspect in all things. And so we don't see any strong threats at this time, but we always keep our eyes open and our ear to the ground. And the other macro issue that maybe isn't as highlighted at the state level as it is at the federal level, but protecting the hydro operations and the value of our hydro system is utmost to us, and that's even beyond Title 54, even though most public utilities do operate with power from the Bonneville Power Administration, which is, the hydro system. So those are huge issues for us that we continue to fight, and I don't know if Steve will have some comments about where we are on the Columbia River Treaty at a later point this afternoon, but we're doing a lot of things at the federal level on that. So dropping back down to our Tier 1 issues, the safe harbor provision that we have, that we want to make sure that any resolution to any changes in telecommunications, that we're not put in a position of being a provider of last resort. We have a good system that's starting to work here. As a matter of fact, maybe has not yet been reported, but yesterday we were just introduced to the newest provider, or maybe not the newest, but reintroduced to a provider that's been here for many years, iFiber. And they're going to make a real push to be a player here in Chelan County. So we have competition in Chelan County now. We've had a great relationship with Localtel, and that's who many of us have our provider through. But having a second strong provider, I think, is healthy for the whole area. So we're excited about that, about the potential of that. And then our second tier, as we call it, of issues, we don't see as maybe big issues this year, but ones that we keep our eye on and just feel like you need to know what our position is. We don't see any need for changes in the Open Public Meeting Act in the collective bargaining. And I understand there's been some discussion. That could be problematic here at our local utility. No changes to the state retirement programs that would increase cost to us. No Voting Rights Act bills that include PUDs, and we understand that's been sporadic throughout. I know Yakima has had a real issue with the districts for minorities. We think the districts that we have are working well for us and don't see a need to make a change. And the last, but definitely not least, changes to the public records laws that put additional burdens on us would be burdensome. What more can I say? So that's our issues, and Mayor Cooney.
Welcome. Might want a small chair you have, Doug.
thank you. I'm here representing the five Chelan County mayors. I did reach out, and they reached back and gave me things for input. And so I wrote up 6 pages for Chelan and 1 page for the other. Right, Keith? I would want to make just kind of a general comment. I think being a mayor, I don't know how many people understand, but like we do the budget, we provide public service as far as safety, and there is no us and them being a mayor. It's all just one. We all have to get it done in our own communities. And when we don't have the answers, we tend to reach out to each other. And I just really appreciate the other 4 mayors that I serve alongside. Our issues are pretty much the same. When I ask and tally them up, they're all pretty much the same, and I'll run through some of them. Housing seems to be number one on everybody's chart. There's an idea from Leavenworth gave me an idea as far as the opportunity to institute a sales tax for affordable housing. We all are grasping at how to provide affordable housing. Some people were even having trouble defining affordable housing in Chelan. So housing, I think, by far is number one. I would just echo the make sure we're going through the budget process right now. And we're trying to do as many capital projects for infrastructure in our town as possible, whether it's a new irrigation system at the golf course, Leavenworth has their, I know Cashmere, everybody Keith has their. And it would be nice to be able to go back and rely a little bit on the Public Works Trust Fund. Just, I think you guys get it, but trying to have a municipality do it on their own shoulders is a pretty tough thing. Making sure that MRSC, that was one of the things that people brought up. A fair amount of our council members use it on a regular basis as far as getting legal. It helps us keep our legal costs down. The capital budget was echoed by all of the mayors, as far as I'm sure you guys are well aware of the importance of that. One of the things that was brought up by 3 mayors is wildfires come and go, and they seem to be gone for a couple years now. We're forgetting about them, but we have to think about preparation for our communities. And Joel and I share the same thought as far as it'd be nice in our community if we were able to have burning in the springtime when it's wet and be able to get rid of the brush. It's just fuels in our communities, and we're going to look back at it someday. I regretfully think that we didn't handle brush in a better way, and we didn't allow the fuels to grow in our neighborhoods, and we weren't allowed to burn like the county is allowed to. So one of the things that hits those were all the other cities, so I want to bring up a Chelan thing. We have a we're a city that's impacted between 2 state highways, and we funnel traffic through our town on our old bridge, and we are looking for answers as far as how to mitigate the intersections. If anybody traveled to Chelan this past summer, the amount of traffic, the amount of people, going through our town was quite noticeably more, and we're impacted by between two state highways. So anything that we could, we've talked a little bit about it, and we'll continue to talk about it. And then the final thing that I would bring up is that when I did reach out to Frank just said, "Oh, you just do whatever you want," but he did give me some applications for businesses to come to Wenatchee. So I'm going to pass these up. I will recognize Frank for just a really solid person. When I got started, he always was there to help me and answer questions and continues to help. So thank you for the time.
Yeah. And I apologize. I have to sneak out quickly for a conference call, and then I'll be back. But
okay. So, Hank Lewis.
Standing, if that's okay. My name is Hank Lewis. I'm the Community Development Director for Chelan County. I've been there just over 2 years. Jeff made it real clear to me. I have 5 minutes. It was very clear, but you're blowing through your head. So I was asked to give a brief update on the Shoreline Master Program and its status within the county currently. So in an effort to stay within it, really I'm going to try to share more, a little bit of background, a little bit of the future, and a little bit of the highlights on the challenges and efforts we've had going through this process. The Shoreline Master Program or Master Act was adopted by the state of Washington in 1970 and 72. Chelan County adopted their first shoreline program in 1975. All shoreline master programs in the state are jointly owned between the county and or the city and the Department of Ecology. 50-50 ownership requires local adoption, Department of Ecology confirmation. I'm not sure what the right terminology is. We always get asked, well, why do an update? Well, first off, because 1975 was a long time ago when the only shoreline program was originally adopted. There were some minor amendments done in 98. So there have been significant number of changes in Growth Management Act and critical areas, how to calculate no net loss, all sorts of, and it just kind of goes on and on. Regulations, adoptions that have been adopted, changes within communities have happened, and it's a good time to do that. The state asks you to amend your Shoreline Master Program, I believe it's every 7 years, if I remember correctly. So 1975, 1998, 2017 isn't 7 years. The process started in 2017. Actually as a joint process between the county and all cities within the county. I think it was well intended. Unfortunately, in 2010, that process, my notes here say fell apart, but it kind of broke apart, and the cities started going their own direction with a lot of the data and information that was provided up to that point, and ultimately adopted their independent programs. So there, once again, there will end up being a Chelan County Shoreline Master Program and individual Shoreline Master Programs for each of the cities. I think it was well intentioned, it didn't come to play. The lesson there is joint planning is complicated. And I for one commend you, as you have mentioned, to be able to put three agencies together and work collectively is phenomenal in my eyes. I think that's great. I would sure always encourage that. So complicated. Can you continue to operate independently? The answer is yes. Is it a good thing? Maybe long term that should be reconsidered, in my personal opinion. The original or the most recent draft county shoreline master program went public in 2010, 2012, and more recently 2016. For many reasons, the lesson learned here is breaking up the process and not keeping charging forward, moving forward, baby steps all the way if you need to. You need to keep moving forward. That's the lesson learned there. Second lesson is the document back in 2010, and I think in 2012, although I wasn't here for either of those years, I think the document was too complicated. So I hate you know, I don't mean this negatively, but kind of dumb the document down, simplify the document, make it understandable to the public, reach out and help the public to understand what the document means when it's being implemented. I think could potentially have helped a lot of that early work that was done. The public hearings, again, most recently started up in 2016. There were 7 months of Planning Commission hearings. And if I remember correctly, they doubled up at least 2 hearings per month for several of those 7 months. I don't remember exactly how many. The Planning Commission put in an immense amount of time reviewing detail after detail after detail. I can't even guess the number of public comment hours, 50, 100 hours. I really don't honestly know. If there's a lesson, you know, we found that the Planning Commission, in their effort to represent their community and the people that live here, they struggled with the legalities of the Shoreline Master Program. They struggled with the state requirements and the expectations and trying to recognize and appreciate that Department of Ecology is our 50-50 partner and effectively has a veto in some respect. It's hard for citizens to understand the realities of getting something adopted final. It was very difficult for them. Their recommendation went to the county commissioners, who I don't remember exactly when that was, 4 months ago, 3 months ago? I can't keep these dates straight. The county commissioners, to their credit, I've never seen a group of commissioners or an elected body dig as deep into a document as I've seen happen. There were 6 workshops just to learn terminology, understand the documents, understanding of the different components and the terminology that's embedded into a Shoreline Master Program, not so much in the document that we all look at, which is, by the way, 160 pages long. It's all the addendums. It's all the background research. The amount of effort was tremendous. Pursuant that, now that they've got their education up, they held an additional 8, up to date, they've held an additional 8 public hearings. In fact, the workshops were public as well, but 8 public hearings that there have been ranging from, oh, I don't know what the most was, the minimum was probably 8 to 10 people in public involved, to the top was probably 30, maybe 35, 40. Was it more than that? They weren't there to me, so I didn't count. But lots and lots of new topics. I watched the commissioners take page by page, chapter by chapter, trying to understand how that's going to affect the local community and make decisions based on that. They changed on an individual level. There were numerous requests from individual parties saying my property shouldn't be impacted by being this designation or that designation. They listened to every single one of them. They probably granted a large majority of them. I don't remember the exact numbers. A lot. So that was, and I think the public really genuinely appreciated that they were listened to, they were cared about, staff paid attention to them, commissioners obviously paid attention to them. So with any luck, somewhere around November 21st is the next scheduled hearing. With any luck, that could potentially be the final hearing from the county commissioners, and then they will ultimately adopt it and send it on to the Department of Ecology. Things to remember here in my lesson list here. It's unfortunate, but some of the concerns that were brought up probably back in 2010, 2012, some of those issues remain today. They're just issues that can't be solved to the satisfaction of all parties. It's just the tough reality of being in a elected position responsibility. Most of the public, I think, genuinely understands that the regulations are there to protect the environment. The public also cannot help but say, how does it affect me? And that's the part we have to answer for them every day. Again, same with commissioners. I think I had one staff member dedicated to answering phone calls and inquiries for almost 2 weeks straight. So I'm sure some of you others have done that too. So with any luck, we'll see a document that gets to the Department of Ecology and gets adopted with some, you know, with concurrence of DOE sometime in the next probably 6 to 8 months, realistically. I'd like to be more optimistic. My page says to be it, but I'm not going to be it. I have one piece of trivia that seems to always surprise everyone. If you think of the number of miles of shoreline within Chelan County that's regulated by the Shoreline Master Program. Now, this isn't all, because not all streams, not all water bodies are regulated by the Shoreline Program. It's in excess of 1,500 miles of shoreline that's managed by this program. So this is a very important document to a lot of people out there in the public. That's what I got prepared. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a
question for you.
Yeah. Hank, I have a question. So can you take us through that, the sort of the timeline from the time the county commissioners adopt their plan, if they do, on November 21st? And is it Ecology that has the final determination? Or help me understand that a little bit.
I think the answer is, it's going to be a little vague, but it's effectively yes. Okay. The county commissioners will adopt it. They will adopt whatever they believe represents their community the best that they can offer, still within the guidelines that are provided to them. Department of Ecology has indicated to us that it will be anywhere from 2 to 4 months that they will take or need to review the document in detail and provide feedback to the county. Do they really, truly approve, deny? Not really. They're going to give feedback to the county and suggest areas that they feel either don't meet state law or aren't appropriate or they've overreached or whatever things that they feel necessary to send back as suggested corrections. Mm-hmm. And then it goes back to the county commissioners for further deliberation and adoption.
Okay, so
then
we're looking at
an appeal period technically that they then could appeal a final decision. Yeah.
So sometime in 2018.
I sure hope
yeah.
so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
So, Hank, I want to thank you for applauding the effort of this Tri-Commission for the last 10 years and how effective we've been staying together, but I just want to remind you, we're still working on our first issue.
Yeah.
If I might just add a little bit, because the Shoreline Master Plan affects all three of the commissions. I mean, there's economic development involved there. The Chelan PUD, you have been very engaged with a number of things as components of that. So it's one of the documents that sometimes kind of flies under the radar until it affects you, and then you wonder, how did this ever get in there? But I want to thank the PUD for their involvement and giving input, and all the parties that have been involved, we've really made an effort to make this a document that works for everyone in the county. So, but it is one of those things. The one reason that the process stopped and started, or started and stopped, I guess, is that when we first began, and this is something that is an issue that I think local government has, when the state dictates what needs to happen in a process and then actually dictates the process. And we got to the point where we said, this is really not going to reflect Chelan County's interests. When Ecology was sitting there at the all of the deliberations, here was Ecology saying, well, you can't do that, you can't do that. So, why are we even having this discussion if we're not shaping a plan that reflects Chelan County? And so that's where everything kind of fell apart. And then when it got restarted, and unfortunately, I will say, the state had given Chelan County considerable amount of money to put that plan together, and that money was not well used, unfortunately. But we have been able to get re-engaged, and I think we will have a plan that will be a workable plan for everyone in the county.
Okay. Thank you, Keith. All right. Next item is Lake Chelan water rights allocation process. I don't believe I know Trevor.
And the commissioner, we're going to have that as a 2:15 call-in for both Mike Caputa and Trevor Hutton. So I recommend we just go on to the Pangborn report.
All right. Pangborn Airport Operations.
Trouble now.
Back in your Moses Lake.
over the past few years. The runways have been extended. During that extension period, the two ports came to a new agreement regarding the co-funding of that infrastructure improvement that reduced the share of the Port of Douglas County's contribution to support of the airport from about 30% down to 17% during the duration of that runway extension. But now we're coming back to the 70-30 respective shares of funding of Pangborn operations and capital improvements. And it looks like the Port of Douglas County, our partner, is going to have some trouble in holding up their share of that funding equation. And I know we're the small kids at this table. Our budgets are dwarfed by the PUDs and the county's budget. But these figures that you have on the yellow handout actually are challenging for us as Port of Chelan County and Port of Douglas County entities. I'm bringing this up today, commissioners, because during our strategic planning process, it was clear to the Port of Chelan commissioners that we needed to continue to invest in capital facilities out at Pangborn if we're going to get that complex up to a fully competitive, safe, and quality standard. As I've said, we don't have the financial capacity in our partner at this time to make these improvements. And so putting this issue on the table really to begin the discussion of that the commission believes needs to take place about somehow regionalizing the funding of the airport facility. Right now, of course, Chelan County can hold up its 70% share. It doesn't feel like the Port of Douglas County can hold up their share. So the question is, how do we proceed? And I think we're beginning that discussion at this table at this time with all of you. We haven't determined what the structure of that discussion is going to be moving forward, but the Port Commission thinks we have to undertake it. Somehow, some way, this is too important a facility to let this question slide, that we have to confront the problem and figure out how we're going to find adequate funding to improve Pangborn on the capital side, particularly. We're running at operating at a loss on the O&M side. Believe that Port Douglas County can sustain their share, but as we look at capital facilities, we've got a problem. I'll give you an example. We sell both avgas and jet fuel out at the airport. This past year, particulates were found in the avgas filter. And we've gone in and inspected the tanks, but more particularly the delivery system from the tank to the aircraft, and found that it's 60 years old and showing all of the signs of age. Needs replacement simply put. Replacement is about an $800,000 item, and it needs to take place immediately, and our airport tenants have told us that they fully support our moving forward with that. How do we, as two co-owners, do that? Well, normally we would proceed to design and engineer it and then build the project. But at this point, our partner has not yet committed to that capital improvement. So we're a little bit stuck. Our tech commission believes we need to do what we need to do to maintain safety out there, but it's a bigger, longer-term issue. With that, I'll close. By way of informing everybody, I think all of you at this table will be consulted and involved in the process.
Good question. How's our boarding numbers looking?
Thanks for that question. Business is great at the airport. That's what's important. Our boardings in the third quarter of 17 are 2% higher than the third quarter of 16, but we've had 28 cancellations
in the third quarter of 17, and only two in 16. So 26 more cancellations, and we're still running 2% higher. Wow. Alaska's at about 85% load factor, meaning 85% of the seats back and forth are full. In the old days, that would have caused a carrier to add an additional flight. But because the structure of the air carrier industry is changing a little bit, and because of this pilot shortage, which is responsible for a lot of the cancellations in this quarter, they're not adding a flight at this time. The business is good. The service is working. It's hard to get a seat sometimes, as you probably know.
At that, leading to the next flight.
But, you know, that's what's important here. This is an economic development asset to the region, and it's our front doorstep. And we really need to invest money in capital facilities out there to make it shine and to be a welcoming front door to the community as we grow.
Yes.
Yeah, so I am really thankful that you brought this up, Pat, because I see the airport as a huge, thank you, a huge asset to our community, to our region. And for quite a while, it seems to me that the people of Chelan County might be paying a sort of a disproportionate share of the obligation to make the improvements and things like that. So I'm really interested in learning a little bit more about the regional airport authority idea. I'm not sure if you have anything feel like you could share, or if you want to follow up with my office. I assume that there's a statutory authority to do something like that, but if there isn't, you know, at some point I'd be interested in, you know, learning more about that. And I know we're talking here Chelan and Douglas, but maybe the regional concept pulls in Grant County, because we were at the opening of the new data center Oath down there just recently, and a lot of the folks fly in and head to Quincy. So I'm very thankful that we have this asset in our region. I feel bad for the Port of Chelan, you know, in your situation. And I'm interested in learning more, and I'm interested in helping. And I hope that the Tri-Commission will consider something like this as an ongoing potentially an ongoing agenda item, because I know how important the airport is to everybody here in our economic development. So I hope there's just a lot of talent in this room, and I and the staff here at your utilities and organizations, and I think we can accomplish big things together, and maybe something like making our airport, you know, very successful and making sure we get the capital improvements that need to be made. I think we can do that together as a community, but it'll take some time to sort out, but hopefully we can get there. Yeah.
Thank you. There is a little bit of authority. It's not structured to apply perfectly to our situation,
okay.
But we're going to be investigating that, and we appreciate your support in figuring it out.
Yeah. Douglas County have capacity as well? Their site on in terms of taxing capacity?
Of Douglas County, I think, is at their maximum.
Okay.
Taking their maximum. They don't have any bank capacity.
Okay. Thanks.
There's a graph on the back side of this.
Yeah.
If you haven't turned it over, it shows the
Pat, is there an update, or will there be, in terms of how things are going, looking at additional routes or airlines or other airlines' participation?
Everybody in this room, and I mean everybody in this room, for your support of our campaign to raise $400,000 to apply to that effort. Goal was reached. At this time, we're applying to the USDOT for a 2-to-1 matching grant. We're optimistic about getting that grant, and with that $1.1 million, we'll approach air carriers. Initial indications that Alaska is not likely to be the carrier. They look at us as being a feeder
their Seattle hub and don't want to divert that feed down to San Francisco. So we'll probably be pitching a couple of different carriers for that direct San Francisco service. Unfortunately, the delay in the USDOT opening up this application period has limited our ability to pitch the carriers for 2018 service. Mm-hmm. They like to plan new service in the winter and open it up in early spring. We've missed that window, so it's more likely we'll be hoping for 2019.
Thank you. Not that I have some friends, former neighbors, that have a home in Vallejo and one here, and they said, if you're going to that meeting, I want that question asked because it'd make our life different. But it's the San Francisco route, I think, in terms of economic development and convenience and et cetera, just is a great opportunity if we can manage that, and that'd be great. Thank you, and thanks for taking the question.
Pat, I have a quick question. I was just kind of looking at your financials here as far as it looks like over the 3 years, 83% of the burden was taken on by the Chelan port. My question is actually the operation shortfall. What was the percentage? Was that 83% or was it 100%? You know, on the operation shortfall over the last 3 years?
So we've been carrying probably between 80 and 85% of the operation shortfall, and that doesn't include the overhead for our staff that puts probably $100,000 of Portage Lane County staff time into airport operations. So it's slightly higher, I think, than 85% in real terms. The Port of Douglas is trying to get on their feet and investing in infrastructure and trying to attract revenue to their facilities. But we're at that time right now to face the music and recognize that on an ongoing basis, they don't have the capacity to partner with us on these, on the capital side as well as the operating side.
Okay, thank you.
And you, just to be clear, you have issues both operating and capital. More so capital.
More so capital. We could figure out a way to sustain, I think, the operating deficit into the future. The big capital numbers that...
Staggering. Yeah. What about Port of Quincy? Last question on this, if I could.
You bet.
What about Port of Quincy? Where do they come in? Or is that, that becomes part of the regionalization model, you know? They got a lot of... A lot of happening down there in Quincy.
There's a ton happening, and there are good rumors at the Port of Quincy, but unless they're required to throw in on something like this, I think it's going to be difficult to get them to voluntarily sign up. And, of course, Grant County has 12 port districts, the largest or most lake is an airport, doesn't have commercial service, but I can't see much of Grant County voluntarily voting to join
Commissioner Smith, I just have one comment to make. The airport staff, thank you. The airport staff, I want to make sure we recognize them for doing the very best they can with what they have. We have increased our revenues out there, even though there's a deficit. It looks a lot better than it did several years ago. So for Trent and his staff, they do a terrific job. And when people fly through Pangbourne, they do get a great experience. So I want to make sure that everyone was aware of that.
I have two comments, if I may, too, as well. To your point, Senator Hawkins, Port of Quincy was a large driver in selection of San Francisco. I think our research indicated that our region generates 62 daily flights down to the Bay Area. And I think we all recognize that that potentially could be an aircraft in and of itself with that number of flying residents flying from here down to the Bay Area every single day. So they were a large participant and driver in that decision. The second thing I want to add, and that is that the likelihood of landing another carrier is going to increase significantly the capital improvements required out the terminal to accommodate a second carrier out there. Yeah. So we've got some fairly significant capital issues coming up just to handle our infrastructure.
Okay. Thank you. Great update, and I think all of us in this room concur how important an asset that airport is to North Central Washington. It's regionalization makes a lot of sense somehow, some way. Okay.
Can I just ask one question? Is there a way to localize the security so we don't have to use TSA?
Good luck.
Suggesting the
Chalene
County Sheriff?
The Chalene PD's security's pretty tight.
I mean, it's been tough enough. I got a hip replacement, and you don't just get to walk through anymore.
Everybody else gets to walk through. You don't.
No, I know. Keith, over there.
All right. Where am I? I haven't marked my list off. I think we're going to talk about Chelan County infrastructure right now, if I'm not mistaken. Greg Carrington and Laura Jakes.
So, hi, everybody. Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources for Chelan PUD, and that's code word for our group is responsible for selling all of the surplus energy up and down the coast of the west coast of the United States, which means energy flows all the way from Canada all the way down into Mexico. And I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that we're doing and how it affects us here in Chelan County and some of the things that we want to do here. So we handed out this slide presentation. I'm going to talk about three of the slides for you, and then Laura is going to talk about the last three for that. So I'm going to flip to slide number three. It's actually labeled two at the bottom. And so this is background information. About 80% of the energy that we produce here in Chelan County is used outside of the county. Revenues from the power sales, the wholesale power sales, is what we use to keep our rates low. Just for an approximation, our rates in Chelan County are about 50% lower as a result of us subsidizing those with the wholesale power that we sell outside of the county. So the recent question that has come up, and whenever I am at a conference, I get approached by businesses that are at those counties, and I'm talking about the Boeings and some larger companies, and they come up and they talk to us and they say, you know, we're interested in you supplying power to us, and usually it's in a different county. So we ask the question, you know, rather than shipping all of the energy to other counties, is it worthwhile for us to consider using some of that energy here locally? And if we did that, how would we go about doing that? So this infrastructure study that we're talking about is, first of all, is that a concept that we all feel is worthwhile pursuing? And if it is a concept that we're interested in pursuing, where would we put them? I think, Keith, you mentioned the fact that 13% of the county is available for private use. So if we were going to go out and recruit companies to come into this area, where exactly would we tell them to go? Particularly the customers that I'm talking about would be larger customers that would want to come into Chelan County. So we decided to put forward an infrastructure study and to try to make a determination as to where that would be. The first part of the infrastructure study would be to go out there and collect all of the existing information. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. We want to be able to use what we have. And so if you move on to slide number, the one that looks like this, it's about the fifth slide in. This is kind of an outline of the timeline that we're talking about here. We, as part of this effort, have gone out and reached out to all of the county and the cities, and we determined, as we were having a conversation with Patrick in particular, that we discovered that the port was actually undertaking an infrastructure study very similar to what we're doing. So now, as a result of that conversation, we are now going to team with them. We're going to have an interlocal agreement between Chelan PUD and the port. I understand that there might be some other studies that are out there that we can use as well. And we're going to undertake this infrastructure study to make basically an inventory of all of the sites within Chelan County that would be agreeable for a business that wanted to come into Chelan County. We would talk to the cities, you know, they may or may not want a bigger company coming into the city, and we would make a list of all of the places where we would want companies to go to, and where would that be. Laura's going to talk in more detail about that. So phase one is the infrastructure study. Phase two is if we decided to move forward, we would make a determination as to what kind of marketing strategy we would want to do. Just so you all know, my goal on all of this is to make sure that what we say collectively is, you know, we have a very clear, concise, and consistent message so that as companies come into Chelan County and want to move here, we all are saying the same thing. We know where to go. We know where all the sites are located. And we can work together and, you know, really make Chelan a very attractive place for companies that do want to move into this area to come to. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Laura. She's going to talk about the specifics of the study itself.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that opportunity. Is this on?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we have received a $50,000 grant from CURB to conduct this study of commercial and industrial lands in Chelan County. The reason that we went ahead with the study is because we were receiving a lot of inquiries at the port, and we didn't have enough information at our fingertips to directly connect people with property owners that and property that was available. And we also didn't have real good information about where utility infrastructure was available. So we contracted with Burke Associates, and we've been working with them for a couple of months now. The project that we have under contract is scheduled to be completed in the mid-December. It's intended to be an online tool that's available both to staff and agencies such as ours that are at this table, but also forward-facing to the public so that anybody can access it anywhere. If there's a business that's interested in coming to Chelan County and they want to search, they can search this tool by the size of vacant land if they need vacant land. They can search by building size. They can search by the zoning, by the availability of utility infrastructure to that property. And one of the other intentions of this project was to help us identify where there might be some gaps in infrastructure so that we could potentially partner with the utility providers in the county and build that out where it made sense. So we're pretty excited to hear from the PUD that you were interested in changing philosophy on large power users, because that is one element of requests that we did get, was folks that were interested in larger power contracts, and we would always turn them over to the PUD. But this way, it if we're able to create this project where we're showing different areas where 5 megawatt or more power contracts were available, it would really help us focus those prospects to particular areas. We have another product that's going right alongside this, and that's called Zoom Prospector. Craig, you might have seen that, released that project at the Partners Breakfast that we held some weeks ago. And this is an adjunct to that product. That product is born out of the Commercial Brokers Association. It's been sponsored by the state as well. But its primary focus is to provide properties, information about properties that are already listed. And it's got great demographic information on it as well. So you want to keep that in your toolbox. This product is agnostic in terms of whether or not the property is actually listed for sale, because sometimes the person might be interested in selling, but they're not really ready to list. And so if a prospect identifies that property, they can contact the property owner directly. We're using data from sources that already exist, from the assessor's office, from the PUD, and the other utilities in the city. So we're not creating our own data, and it will be living so that it will be updated as regularly as the data is updated from those various agencies.
Okay. Any questions? Jeff, we have some call-in.
Yes, Commissioner, we're going to see if they're on the line. There are two people that are part of this Lake Chelan water rights allocation discussion. One is Trevor Hutton. He's Ecology's Water Resources Section Manager for the Central Regional Office. And Mike Caputa, who is the county's Natural Resources Director. Commissioner England, as you know, represents the county on the working group, and he asked for an explanation at this meeting of how pending water rights will be processed and what happens when the allocation is used up. So let's check and see if Trevor's on the line.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Trevor's there. And Mike, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Excellent. Okay, Trevor, would you like to start?
Sure. So I'll just start with kind of going back to
where this came from originally in case there's folks in the room who aren't familiar with the process. But in 1992, there was an agreement reached by the Department of Ecology and the Chelan PUD regarding water to be made available for future uses. And so some amount of that has been used up. Through the years, though, unfortunately, the accounting started to get fuzzy. There was some uncertainty about really sort of what was left in this reserve quantity, and so we wanted to get a better picture of what was left. We worked pretty hard with the PUD over the past year and a half, 2 years, to come up with a figure that we're confident in and taken into account a lot of different variables as far as how different water rights interconnect and relate to each other. So ultimately, we do have, you know, a number now that we're, it's roughly around 5,200 acre feet that are left for future uses in the Lake Chelan Basin. So the question before us today is, you know, how is that process going to work and what happens next? So the process that we're anticipating today is that we will go through a coordinated cost reimbursement process. This is a tool that the legislature gave Ecology to allow us to, in effect, batch process a number of applications that are currently pending. It's important to note that there are a lot of applications still on the books. They're existing applications. It's, you know, many times over, quantity-wise, has been requested than is available. But if we draw some inference from what work that we've done in previous cost reimbursement projects, we know that some amount of that that over-ask, if you will, is going to go away because there are going to be applications that are no longer relevant. People have found water some other way. They don't own the property any longer, and their dream or their goal has changed. And so we're going to begin the process of reaching out to applicants and, you know, first of all, seeing who's still out there, who's still interested in the program, who's interested in their application, because that's going to help us inform, you know, what water is truly available. I didn't coordinate this with Mike, so I'm sorry, Mike, if I'm stepping on your toes, but I feel free to jump in here when I'm through. I've just got a couple other things to say. So we anticipate that the 5,200 acre feet will get us, you know, quite a bit of good results. We're going to process in priority order, which means if you applied first, you're going to be first in line, so long as you're signing up for the coordinated cost reimbursement program. We're not sure who's going to sign up and who isn't at this point, and we will be doing outreach on that to better ascertain who's interested and who would be willing to enter into those contract agreements to pay for that processing. The second question is, well, what happens when it's used up? 5,200 acre feet, you know, there could be significantly more demand than that. You know, that's a tough answer. And right now, from Ecology's perspective, it's sort of a zero-sum game. Once we get to the end of that, it's over in terms of what we can permit from that reserve, unless the reserve changes or there's some other water supply project brought online. I think Lake Chelan is potentially a good environment for water banking just because of the nature of the lake environment. It's going to be easier to manage. And, you know, I think there is also some discussion among other parties about reaching out to the PUD and seeing if there's any possibility of expanding that reserve. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mike and see if he has anything to add or fill any gaps that I've left.
Trevor, thanks. I thought that was a great overview. I would add that the county commissioned the water resources report that RH2 completed back in 2014 because we wanted to get to what was the bottom line and what was available there. So we appreciate the PUD and Ecology reviewing that report. The county just met with Ecology about a month ago, and we're going to move forward here in the next couple months with trying to figure out who has viable applications in line. When it comes down to it, I think there may be a math issue here, a numbers problem with the water that's needed long term and the water that's available. And I think that's, Trevor, what you were alluding to about the tough answer. It is likely that the top, I think the first 10 or 15 applications that are in line would likely move forward with their applications and may take up about 3,000 acre feet out of that 5,000 acre feet. And I think there's a question then, you know, after that, how far down the list can you go? One of the interesting aspects about the Lake Chelan Reserve is that it is available for all water uses, and that's different than, say, the coordinated cost reimbursement process we've been working through in the Wenatchee, where it's only available for domestic uses. Of course, when you have some of those larger irrigation uses, they can eat up quite a bit of the reserve. So I do see down the road some challenges with water availability in Lake Chelan. There's another 5,000 acre feet that's taken up by claims. And I suspect that the only reliable way for the Department of Ecology to consider accessing the claims water is through an adjudication in the Lake Chelan Basin. And I think that's one of those, you know, that's a difficult, lengthy process to go through. So on our end, I think the message is, you know, the numbers don't look great for the long term, and we're going to have to figure out how to work together to come up with some solutions for the long term.
Trevor, anything to add?
I think that pretty well sums it up. I'd be happy to answer any questions either now or with follow-up if anybody has any.
Any questions from around the table?
I guess. You go first. Well, this is Keith Gaynor. Trevor, I'm curious about addressing the actual water that's available. I mean, at some point in time, you determine we have X amount of cubic feet per second or acre feet to allocate. I mean, what is the consideration for changing conditions that might warrant raising or allowing more water to be allocated?
So a couple pieces to that. One, as we do work in the Chelan Basin, changes to existing water rights, et cetera, it may free up some that's been previously allocated that doesn't ultimately get put to use and comes back to the reserve. So we're going to have an annual accounting exercise to make sure that we have accurate numbers. With respect to anything outside of that, as far as the, you know, making the reserve bigger, really ecology is unable to say what the Chelan PUD can and can't do with their water right. They established a water right to the flow of the Chelan River in 1925, and so to that extent, they're really going to be the key piece in maintaining and protecting their water right while also understanding the complex relationship between the PUD and the people of the Lake Chelan area. I think that's going to be something that we'll need to be working on over the next several years.
Any other questions, Commissioner?
Yeah, this is for Trevor or Mike. This is Ann Congdon. So you talk about the 5,200 number acre feet, and then you mentioned the claims that would probably add up to about 5,000 acre feet. So that's a scary number. Can you clarify what claims are? I think they are. Claims are determined by going way back, the earliest claims, correct?
Correct, yes. So claims are assertions of water that's been put to use that predates Washington State Water Code.
Okay.
And so ecology is unable to administratively say if those are valid or not. That is what Mike was alluding to when he mentioned the need for adjudication. Only a superior court can adjudicate the rights as they arise through claims.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, gentlemen, we thank you very much for taking time to come on the line with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.
Commissioner, back to you.
You bet. Speaking of our relationship with our folks up in Chelan, I think our manager, Steve Wright, is going to share with us a update on substation siting.
So let me say, first of all, in the utility industry, there's across the country, most utilities, certainly more than half, are not experiencing load growth anymore. So combination of energy efficiency programs that are very successful and just overall what's going on with economic activity, most utilities are complaining about not having load growth. We don't have that problem here. So we, in fact, recently increased our load forecast and are now anticipating and experiencing and anticipating about 2% per year load growth. So substantially in excess of what's happening other places. When you have load growth, ultimately you need to build more infrastructure in order to be able to support the need for that increase in electrical use. And so we have been working through a series of issues in terms of adding substations, transmission, distribution in order to be able to serve loads. We've engaged in a stakeholder engagement process, a very successful one in Leavenworth, challenging along the way, but ultimately successful in terms of getting to a good conclusion. We've had more challenges in Chelan in terms of trying to find a site that worked. And the biggest problem that we ran into is the area that we were looking to build based on where the loads were growing. It's just very hard to find a spot that either isn't close to some residential homeowners or near some undeveloped lot that people think that they're going to sell for purposes of development. And so they see consequences associated with that. The board voted last night to proceed with a particular site to at least the next step, which is to acquire the land and then move through the conditional use permitting process. I think the bigger question is one that we talked about last time, which is throughout this process, we have had many people come and appeal to us and candidly in an increasingly emotional way that we find better ways to do planning and to be able to identify potential sites for substations early so that people who are choosing to locate in a neighborhood would have some sense that there is an exposure that a substation may be developed at some point. And in particular, as you're getting large development, that there is, we had many appeals through the process that there would be ways found to be able to set aside land for purposes of substations and other infrastructure. Again, recall that we discussed this at the last meeting of this group and that we chose to put together, ask the planners to come together to begin to talk about that. There have been a couple of meetings of that group. It's always difficult to do because everybody is so overwhelmed, and not surprisingly because there's so much growth going on. The people who are working on this are overwhelmed with work. Just wanted to really make an appeal that we place an increased emphasis on that. There are a lot of proposed development projects around the county going on right now in particular that we're seeing coming through the door. We've tried to explain to people we do not have the authority to require that land be set aside for substations, nor, as we were requested during the process, do we have the authority really to put in place a power moratorium to say we will not serve a particular area unless some conclusion is brought to bear. So, again, we've got a decent start in terms of thinking through how we do planning for growth, but there's an opportunity here to be able to work together to potentially, I think, put ourselves all in a better position to be able to deal with the inevitable complaints that come about development in particular neighborhoods. So just ask you if you could, if you share that perspective, if you could, as you go back, just place an emphasis on the importance of this effort to work together on the planning side.
Any questions for Steve? And Commissioner Smith, before we go on to the mayor's, we had scheduled an update on Confluence Parkway from Jeff Wilkins at this point in the agenda. You had to cancel at the last minute. There was a WSDOT meeting that popped up. So back to you.
Okay. Mayors, any updates?
I'd like to express the City of Cashmere's support for the West Cashmere bridge. We're partnering with the port and the county on that project, and we're setting aside funding for the extension of Sunset Highway down to Goodwin Road when that project comes about. We're nearing the end of the very first coordinated cost reimbursement project in the state with Ecology in getting water rights for the city of Cashmere. Our water right applications are over 30 years old. It's very difficult to do any planning when you don't know whether you're going to have water or not. And we hope to have that completed by the end of the year. We've been part of the Wenatchee work group for several years, that's coming about. What the coordinated cost reimbursement actually is we pay for the position at Ecology that's working on this process, and then we pay again for a backfill person that is doing the work that person would have been doing. So that's what it amounts to, and we've already we're part of that group, and that whole group has coughed up the money to make that possible, and it looks like it's actually going to happen after 30 years. So that's been very encouraging. Took some legislation that you gentlemen helped with, and one other project we have right now is a regionalization study that's funded by the PUD Public Benefit Funds, and that's for the entire area in the Wenatchee River watershed. We've partnered with Leavenworth and Cashmere, Peshastin Water District, Chelan County, and one other, Alpine. That's an effort to see if there's any savings in water or wastewater operation or maintenance. And it's a unique situation. We're all under the same TMDL on the Wenatchee River. There's been water at Monitor for about 12 years provided by the PUD, and no wastewater. You have to have both to have growth. So you can see nothing's really happened in that area in that period of time. And we're just trying to take a regional look at the whole situation there and see what can be done. So that's about it.
Hi. As far as Leavenworth is concerned, I'll just kind of piggyback on what Jeff said. The TMDL, total maximum daily load of phosphorus, requirements from the Department of Ecology are mandated a new sewer system in Cashmere, which they have now built at very great expense, and a new one in Leavenworth, and updates to our sewer plant, which really are almost a whole new sewer plant, $10 million for our little town. And that is a result of the phosphorus load. So that's a big thing that's happening in Leavenworth right now. That's due by 2020. We're undergoing the engineering for it now and going through the grant and permitting processes for this upgrade to our sewer plant. And we also probably have to buy additional real estate in order to accommodate the new what it's doing at our sewer, what it will do at our sewer plant. So that's kind of a big thing in Leavenworth and Cashmere. Unfunded mandate. I just want to say that again if I didn't say it loudly enough the first time. We have a great sewer plant that was probably good for another 20 years. If not for phosphorus, the total maximum daily load of phosphorus for a very short period of time every year. So that's something we're really grappling with right now. And then on another note, together with the Chelan County Port District and our Chamber of Commerce, the City of Leavenworth is undergoing a pretty significant parking study right now. Anybody ever had a hard time parking in Leavenworth?
Never.
Yeah, never. So what we're doing is assessing our inventory of parking, how it affects us, and what do we actually need. That study is ongoing. We're in the middle of it right now. It's about a year's year-long study, and we expect to have some pretty significant results to the study and recommendations in about 2 or 3 months. So I'd say those are two big items that are happening in Leavenworth, and I'm happy to invite you all to our annual Christmas lighting festival, first 3 weekends in December, if indeed you can find a place to park.
I just wanted to make a comment, Sherry. I wanted to commend you for the task that you've taken on with studying housing up in Leavenworth, and what were the things that you could actually do as a city to make a difference. And I just commend you. I received your letter the other day on the specific things, and I just think that was great leadership on your part, and I wanted to thank you.
I want to expound on everything. Steve served on the task force for our housing affordability issues in Leavenworth, and thank you for that, Steve. We did come up with a number of things that we can do, sort of first-tier goals that we can accomplish now, second-tier goals that we hope to be able to accomplish later, and third-tier goals that require legislative assistance and are just a little more complex. Our first-tier goals, which we have already put to our Planning Commission, have to do with changing zoning, allowing for greater density, and identifying areas inside the city of Leavenworth or annexable, I don't know if that's a word, but it is today, annexable lands that could be utilized as multifamily. One other thing that we have done is to streamline the process for multifamily construction. And we've got a developer, Tom Lynn, who has the Vilcommon Village that's sort of in the area behind Safeway, who has just concluded or is in the process of concluding a sale of some acreage back there that will provide 156, I think it is, or 160 units of apartment, long-term, not overnight rentals, but long-term apartment complex, to be built by the Widener Group, who is the same people that built Riverside 9 here in Wenatchee. So you may be familiar with that development. We expect them to break ground in the spring. So we hope to see some real relief, I think, with regard especially to rental housing almost immediately. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm from Antioch, and I'd like to thank Mike because he did a good job presenting what the mayors want. One thing I'd like to bring out that really affects our cities is called the WUI, the Wildland Urban Interface Areas. We've identified several in Antioch that we get a fire come out of the mountains, we can't protect quite a few of our homes because we're not allowed to burn. So much brush has accumulated over the last several years. Look at Chelan and part of Wenatchee there that just some minor burning in the off times of the year would really make a difference. I've been working with DOE folks for 4 years, and I don't seem to be getting anywhere. So I like to emphasize that. And I think Gaynor's brought it up several times and some of the other people. But that's, for us, that's very important because we're all bounded by the forest and lands that could go fast. Thank you.
I'll just run through a couple of really quick things. First off, thanks to the PUD commissioners for having the stand or the courage to vote last night for the substation. There was two properties, and I know it was not a easy thing to do. Thank you. In a weird way, I'd like the discussion to keep going because while you guys were discussing it, we could take cover and do other things. So keep going. The development pressure in Chelan is peaking. Not sure what will ever change it right now, but we have a new application in for 85 acres, 250 homes to be built right across from Peterson. It's the western side of the Butte. That's on top of the the lookout on top of Legacy Ridge. So there's a fair amount of building that's going around Chelan, and people are at their wits' end. The people that live there, they're just fed up with it. So it's a hard thing to right. It's a strange time right now to be mayor in Chelan, but we'll get through it. At 4 o'clock, we have a workshop, and we are going to move forward with a capital plan workshop up in Chelan for the budget, final budget thing, and we are going to move forward and between bonding and going into our general fund, spend $2.6 million for infrastructure for projects that have been on the drawing board, I think, since Mike was in high school. So that's been a long time. We're talking about doing public restrooms, park maintenance building. The one-way bridge is happening on April 1st. So it's about $2.6, $2.7 million. We do have a new clinic in town. It's Columbia Valley Clinic. Is a very nice addition to the town. And I think it's next week when there's a ribbon cutting for the roundabout, and I'm going to have a tooth extraction that day. So I don't know. I'm looking for a volunteer, and this is what I like, being mayor friendship. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, thank you, mayors. And
Allison, anything from Wenatchee you want to share?
My mayor sends his regrets for not being here today. Push the send button on the infra grant. So thanks to all of you who are making trips to Washington, D.C. and talking about that effort, long-needed transportation improvements for our region. And we're really happy to have the region come together, having Douglas County, Chelan County, and all of us come together for transportation improvements. And also well underway is the design and implementation of the sewer expansion into the Sunny Slope area. And so we'll be seeing the first improvements there with lift stations next year. Very important to our overall growth. And the city is turning over every rock we can to incent new housing. Again, we have stories every day of people leaving the area because they had a job but couldn't find housing. And so we have a number of projects that are underway. And again, legislation proposed, so we thank our legislators for your help. Last year with House Bill 1797, we look at making another run at that this year through the legislative process, that sales tax rebate. Even though we have to do the bills that look at a cost to that, there really is no cost until the project is built, and we see some immediate projects that could happen with that legislation. So thank you.
And I apologize for not seeing you back there, Allison.
Commissioner, I got to do something real quick. So we have a compliance requirement to test an emergency action plan every so often, and today happens to be, or at least I just got the notice that today is the day, and I'm required to notify you. This is a test, by the way. This is not a real event. I'm required to notify you that there could be an overtapping of the Lake Chelan Dam and risk to the left embankment. Again, this is a test. This is not a real event. And now you have been notified.
Okay, thank you. And something came to me as I was listening and watching to all of the entities in this room. One other thing that I think everybody in the room might have an interest in, and every entity in the room, including our state legislators, have been involved in this project over a number of years. And that is, this past week I received a notification from the country of Kyrgyzstan that the newly appointed governor of the Oblast of Izyk-Kul, and Izyk-Kul is a sister region with Chelan County, official sister region as implemented by Commissioners Gaynor, England, and Walter a couple of years ago, that the new governor is planning on bringing a delegation to Chelan County sometime after the first of the year. And as I said in the past, every entity in this room, including our legislators in the form of Mike Steele prior to being a legislator, but Senator Parlett when she was a legislator, have been involved in this project for a number of years. So stay tuned. And all the cities have been involved through your chambers of commerce. It's been quite a ride for me, but this new delegation that's coming promises to be the most diverse yet, with people from the tourism industry, education, the cities that surround the lake of Izyk-Kul. So stay tuned. Now I've got a much broader list to tap into at some moment in time. Any other good of the order for the meeting, Senator Hawkins?
Well, on that note, I guess I would just say if you need a tour of the state capitol, just contact us. I know it's a long haul in January to get over there, but
I'm trying to convince him not to come in January.
Yeah, but if your delegation's interested, you know, we'd be happy to host them at the Capitol.
Super. Thank you.
Feel free to contact my office. I just wanted to say thanks for this meeting. I think we've attended them every year, so maybe this is my fifth, but as a legislator. But I think this one has been one of the best, just to have that feeling. And I think some of the things we talked about, you know, whether it's the regional airport concept, the infrastructure study that Allison just brought up, the transportation plan, it just seems like there's a lot of cooperation and coordination. And I just think, like I said before, there's just a lot of strength and wisdom and experience in this room with all of you elected officials and your staff and the people who work in your organizations. And I just wanted to continue to encourage us to continue to have more meetings like this. In fact, I can't speak for my colleagues, but I'd be willing to even go a little bit longer on meetings like this so we can do an even deeper dive into some of these issues, because there aren't many opportunities when really the three of us are in the same room together, let alone all of us in the same room, you know, with the mayors and everybody. So, and oftentimes as legislators, we're asked to do individual meetings too with the individual groups. So I think there'd be a lot of efficiency gained if we could go even deeper into some of these issues. But just with that said, I just wanted to compliment everybody on this meeting. Really enjoyed it, and look forward to more meetings in the future. And like I said, I can envision this meeting turning into a Chelan County legislative or Chelan County issues summit, you know, sort of thing, for lack of a better word. And I just think the more we all are aware of each other's interests, then there's more of opportunity for shared benefit and collaboration, things like that. So anyway, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think just the old joke when they first started was, if you could announce your next asphalt project, then that way the rest of it could set our calendars to when to cut into it, you know. And so we've come a long way.
Yes. Any other comments or good of the order for our group? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned then. Thank you, everybody. This was great.
And I'll adjourn the Port Chelan County meeting as well.
Okay.